What can you do when your friends get sick of you prying into their problems?
Do what everyone else is doing, of course. Start a podcast.
Introducing If I Speak, a brand new podcast from me, Ash Sarkar.
And me, Moya Lothi McLean, where we pitch each other our big theories about the universe, share the intrusive thoughts keeping us up at night, and best of all, tackle your personal dilemmas.
We'll be asking questions like, does tabloid gossip turn us all into conspiracy theorists?
Should you financially support a parent?
Is Moya turning into a bit of a femcel?
Yes. What's Ash's most toxic trait?
Interrupting! From dating disorders to family feuds, career dilemmas to online etiquette,
the political gets personal on If I Speak.
Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's gossip elevated.
Here and now, I give you my word. If you entrust me with the presidency, I will draw on the best of us, not the worst. I'll be an ally of the light, not the darkness. It's time for us, for we the people, to come together.
I'm the only thing standing between the American dream and total anarchy, madness, and chaos.
In the midst of a deadly global pandemic, on November 3rd, the United States will go to the polls for an era-defining election. In the coming weeks on Intelligence Squared, we'll be speaking to world-leading experts about what's at stake in Biden versus Trump.
The most important election of our lifetime.
This is the most important election of our times.
Probably one of the most important elections of our lifetime.
This is the most important election in our lifetime.
Politicians say every time, this is the most important election. This one's really that important.
Hello, podcast listeners. I'm Connor, and welcome to this Intelligence Squared Election Day special. Today, we're here to answer your questions about how Joe Biden and Donald Trump have performed in the final days of the presidential race. What are the key battleground states that you should be looking out for as the votes start being counted in the next 24 hours? And what's at stake for the country and the world as a whole? We have a great set of guests. Danielle Pletka and Emily Tamkin joined us. And the podcast was hosted by Manveen Rana, senior investigative journalist at The Times and Sunday Times. And she's also the host of a great podcast called Stories of Our Times. And if you enjoy our content, you should check out that podcast via the link in our episode description. But now, let's go to the episode.
Hello and welcome to this Intelligence Squared election special with me, Manveen Rana. We're recording on November the 2nd, the eve of what's set to be the most momentous election, not just for America, but for the world. To help us understand what's likely to happen, I'm delighted to introduce our guests today. We're joined by Danielle Pletka, former Vice President and current Senior Fellow in Foreign and Defence Policy Studies at the American Enterprise Institute. She teaches US Middle East policy at Georgetown University, and she's a regular contributor to NBC News Meet the Press. And we're also joined by Emily Tamkin, the US editor at The New Statesman, where she co-hosts the World Review podcast. She's also the author of The Influence of Soros and the forthcoming book Bad Jews. Welcome both. Now, we've seen today that 95 million Americans have already voted with one day to go before the election. Do you think by this time on Wednesday, we'll have a clear idea of the winner? What sort of time do you think viewers can safely go to bed? Danielle first.
We've heard from Pennsylvania state officials that the odds are that they're not going to be able to finish counting their absentee ballots, their mailed-in ballots, by tomorrow night. And given the importance of Pennsylvania, unless we see blowouts in other states, we may actually not be able to go to bed satisfied or dissatisfied and knowledgeable tomorrow night.
Do you think we'll have a clear idea if Florida comes in early? I mean, Emily, you know, we've seen a lot of frenzied last-minute campaigning in a few of these states. What are the battleground states and which ones will really decide this election?
So the two areas that I think your listeners are going to want to look at are the Sun Belt states and the Rust Belt states. So Sun Belt, we're thinking of Florida, Georgia, Arizona, even Texas was tied, according to a Morning Consult poll today. And those states can start counting early votes ahead of time. So you know, North Carolina, for example, 97% of the votes will be counted tomorrow. But the Rust Belt states, that's Wisconsin, that's Michigan, and that's Pennsylvania, down to which many people are saying this election is going to come, those are very limited in what they can start counting before Election Day. And for that reason, you know, if Florida is very clearly called for Biden, which I'm extremely skeptical will happen, just because Florida is very often very close between the two parties. If it's a Biden blowout in Florida and Texas, then yes, sure, we'll know. But I think it's extremely important that we in the media frame this as you know, the election is called when the votes get counted, not when the clock strikes midnight on November 3rd.
So when do you think we'll have a clear idea?
It may be a few days is my best guess. Now, this is further complicated because both parties have teams of lawyers ready to go to take challenges one way or the other about which votes can be counted or not in the courts. The president this weekend made news by saying that, you know, as soon as November 3rd is over, he's going to send the lawyers in and stop the counting in Pennsylvania. So it could take I don't have a clear answer for you. It could be the night of. It could take a few days just for the counting to be continued, or it could be weeks of protracted legal battles.
And if there are legal battles, do we know what grounds they'd be going on, Emily?
You know, it really depends on the state. So there have been some cases about for how long you can count the ballots. And the Supreme Court actually came down with two different decisions in Pennsylvania where they said you could keep the ballot extension because it was a state court that had made the decision versus in Wisconsin where a federal court that made the decision to extend the deadline that you could continue to receive ballots, And so the Wisconsin extension was thrown out, whereas the Pennsylvania extension remained. In Texas today, actually, maybe while we're recording this, a federal judge in Texas is deciding whether you can accept ballots that are dropped off by car at curbside voting and whether that is considered valid or not. The Texas Secretary of State said, yes, you can. A Texas Supreme Court said, yes, you can. But the Texas Republican Party brought this case to the federal court as well. So, you know, we're seeing it challenged on a number of grounds. We should expect challenges on for how long the counting can take place, for how long you can continue to accept the ballots, right? Because we're having an unprecedented amount of ballots sent in by mail this year, and how the ballots were distributed as we're seeing in Texas now.
And Danielle, if this does turn into a protracted legal battle, how important is Amy Coney Barrett's appointment to the Supreme Court in deciding all of this?
That's a very interesting question, and I don't think any of us know the answer. So Amy Coney Barrett was sworn into office and immediately confronted with two of the cases that Emily has just been talking about the length of time that states can count votes. One, a revisitation of Pennsylvania's decision to count votes later, and another, and she chose to recuse herself. She said that she hadn't had sufficient time in order to review the case history, and I'm sure that was very disappointing to a lot of people who had been a little bit hysterical about her appointment. But that's what she did. Now, will she be in that same position later on? I suspect not. On the other hand, you know, she is a judge. She's not a political partisan. And so while the Republican activists may think that it's going to be a boon to them, and Democrat alarmists may think that it's going to be going to tip the election to Donald Trump. In fact, Donald Trump may even think that. I suspect that she will make decisions on the merits. Let's hope it doesn't end up there, because God knows, last time it ended up in the courts, it was a nightmare.
Well, I mean, talking of it being a nightmare, if there is a Biden win, Emily, do you think there'll be a peaceful transfer of power?
The short answer is that yes, I do think that if it's a Biden win, we will have a clear transfer of power. What I also think, though, is that Trump will. I mean, I think it's important to remember that Donald Trump said that the election was that there had been electoral corruption last time, and he won the election, right? But he said that if there hadn't been fraud, that he would have won the popular vote by even more votes. So if that's the claim that he made when he won, I think that if he loses, we should expect him to make similar claims. Now, I think that if it's a significant, if Biden wins by a significant margin, then he can say that. I think that if it's a clear Biden win, I don't think that Republican senators will join him in that. My concern is that this election is very narrow one way or the other, and that it gets And then it gets tied up in the courts and votes get thrown out. And, you know, it, because so much doubt has already been cast on the electoral process by the president, I do worry that that, not that it undermines the legitimacy of the results so much as it undermines the legitimacy of the process. Like, to me, that's what's so important about the next few days. It's people feel so strongly about the two candidates and their policies, and there are very real consequences of this election, and we can talk about that. But the faith that we have in our electoral process and the legitimacy and the idea that it's the people who decide and not the courts, I think all of that is extremely important and at stake in the next few days.
Danielle, there have been sort of reports or certainly fears of violence after the election. Do you think that's a realistic prospect?
It seems realistic after this year. I'm not quite sure where they think the violence is going to spring from. All of the cities that have suggested that shop owners put up plywood barricades. These tend to be metropolitan areas that are largely dominated by Democrats: Chicago, Philadelphia, D.C., Los Angeles, New York. But certainly there have been suggestions that those unhappy with the outcome may turn to violence. I hope that's not true, but the reality is that even in situations that have nothing to do with politics, big sports teams winning, for example, we've seen violence in the cities that I mentioned. And it has unfortunately been one of those years in which people believe that the best way to express their political views is by throwing rocks at the police and by breaking shop fronts and ruining people's lifelong investments in their businesses. It's not really one of those things that's easy for a lot of people to understand. But is there a real risk? Of course there's a real risk.
And is there a sense on the ground? I mean, Emily, this is one of those elections which divides people so much, and it sort of evokes so much emotion on both sides. Is there a danger of that tipping over? Does it feel very different to any other election?
I think in the sense that it's very polarized, that's not different necessarily, right? I think it was extremely polarized last time, and every election feels like this is the most intense election that we've ever had. Like, it felt this way for the first Obama election. It felt this way for Obama's re-election, that kind of division, right? I think what's different is that the logistics of the election are so different. The fact that it's in a pandemic makes it so different. I think that has heightened some of the tension that you're describing. I also think that the fact that this has been a year of, you know, we've seen protests, we've seen militias, there's been violence. I think that we didn't necessarily have that, even though we had polarization in years past, if that makes sense. I mean, there were protests in years past. I think I should say that most of the protests, at least the Black Lives Matter protests that we've seen this year, have been peaceful. But I think that we have not necessarily seen the scale of protests that we've seen this year, or the scale of extremist violence that we've seen this year in an election year before in the United States, coupled with the fact that people are frustrated for economic reasons and because we're still in a pandemic.
I mean, Emily, you mentioned earlier the consequences of this election and how important they are. You know, it has already been described in the media as sort of a pivotal moment, not only for the future of America, but for democracy all over the world. I mean, is that right, or is that an exaggeration?
I mean, I wrote one such piece saying that this is a defining moment for America.
I mean, it's
democracy.
Not that I'm asking you to justify your words, but justify your words.
And I really, yeah, and I actually said, while I said in the piece that I understand that I sound like a paranoid, it sounds like a very dramatic thing to say. You know, Danielle referred to alarmists earlier, and I do sometimes feel like I sound like an alarmist when I write about this, but I just think that having a sitting president undermine the legitimacy of his reelection is so unprecedented, and that the way that the next few days go are really going to sort of set us on course for where we go next. Now, there are other policy issues on which the two candidates are very different. I mean, you can look at climate change or the way that they engage with the with multilateralism or on immigration or on healthcare, right? Like there are many policy differences, and I don't mean to suggest that those aren't important or that there are not people who vote. I would hope that many people vote for policy reasons. But I think that the fact that the very concept of the election is also being campaigned on is what brings us into uncharted and scary waters.
Intelligence Squared is a tight-knit team doing big things, and it means we're always looking for tools that can help streamline managing tasks. That's why I want to talk to you for a minute about NetSuite. NetSuite provides cloud-based software to get things moving. Maybe your business has been humming, but you can feel things are falling behind a little bit. Or perhaps your team is getting snowed with manual tasks and closing those books is taking forever. If this sounds like you, you should know these three numbers. 37,000, 25, 1. 37,000, that's the number of businesses which have upgraded to NetSuite by Oracle. 25, NetSuite turns 25 this year. That's 25 years of helping businesses do more with less, allowing them to close their books in days, not weeks, and drive down costs. And one, because your business is one of a kind. So you get a customized solution for all of your KPIs in one efficient system with one source of truth. It means you can manage risk, get reliable forecasts, and improve margins. It's everything you need to grow all in one place. NetSuite is now making an unprecedented offer to make more of that kind of thing possible. Right now, you can download NetSuite's popular KPI checklist designed to give you consistently excellent performance absolutely free at netsuite.com/squared. That's netsuite.com/squared to get your own KPI checklist. netsuite.com/squared. We make a lot of stuff here at Intelligence Squared. So many great chats to enrich the mind like the one you're listening to now. But like any business, it's really essential to be in good shape and keep things efficient so you can see the big picture all in one place. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems, and it's super easy to get started because NetSuite exists in the cloud, so no hardware needed, cutting your IT costs too. And you'll also improve efficiency by bringing all your major processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. That's why over 37,000 companies have already made the move. The cost of living crisis might not be making anything any cheaper, but there's real value in feeling on top of things, which is something I experience firsthand as an event producer every day. And now, by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/squared. That's netsuite.com/squared. netsuite.com/squared. Sponsoring the show for this episode is Marquee TV. Marquee TV is a streaming service with a difference. It's bringing you the top tier of performing arts straight into your living room or onto your device. So think dance, theater, music, anything you might find in the West End, Broadway, or maybe a cool little experimental space too, but saving you the cost of a few tickets as well. I've got happily a bit lost in their vast library of performances, exclusive interviews, and behind-the-scenes content. Choreographer Jonathan Watkins' interpretation of George Orwell's classic 1984 was pretty cool, and I love the dance piece, Sutra, inspired by the skills of Buddhist Shaolin monks. And we've got a special treat for our listeners. Marquee TV offers 3 months of access for just 99 cents. That's right, 3 months for only 99 cents. With the code SQUARED, simply visit marquee.tv and use the promo code SQUARED to dive into the world of arts like never before. Bring the arts home with Marquee TV.
Danielle, you recently wrote a piece too. You wrote an op-ed for the Washington Post in which you said you wouldn't have thought of voting for Trump in 2016, but you are thinking of voting for him tomorrow. Why is that?
You sound shocked and displeased.
No, I just wanted to know what had changed your mind. Well, what's the process you've gone through in the last 4 years?
Part of it is the kind of chat that I've just heard from Emily, you know, the notion that our democracy is somehow in peril. Well, of course, the reason that so many people think our democracy is in peril is because the outcome is not desirable to them. You know, Donald Trump is a deeply dislikable president and says things that are highly objectionable. But I'm not quite sure why we need to give a pass to Joe Biden when he says the only possible way that he could lose the election is chicanery. Or when the person who delivered him, South Carolina, James Clyburn, suggests much the same thing. You know, I'm not quite sure why we pay so much attention to the president's rubbish and not to his competitor's rubbish. Because if you want to demean our electoral process, then really I think it's been open season. Now, the president has a special responsibility, and we know that Donald Trump has not taken seriously that special responsibility to talk about things in the way that we would expect an inhabitant of the White House should. On the other hand, I would suggest that there's plenty of that to go around. Now, as to the question of why, you know, I actually view the last 4 years as a testament to the strength of our democracy. I view the last 4 years as a testament to the strength of our institutions. If our institutions didn't work, we wouldn't have had the impeachment effort. We wouldn't have had the Russia investigation. We wouldn't have had all of the efforts that have been made by the Democratic Party and all of the efforts made by the institutions of our own government to stand in the way of Donald Trump's mistakes, Donald Trump's errors of judgment, Donald Trump's attempts to sidestep the rules and the norms that we see. In short, what we see is our system working and Donald Trump sort of wearing all of his problems on his sleeve.
But that doesn't sound like a ringing endorsement of him as a candidate. What is it about him that's brought you around?
I'm not sure you read my piece. I don't think there was a ringing endorsement of Donald Trump as a candidate in there.
No, but what would make you vote for him?
What would make
over
me
Joe
vote,
Biden?
What would make me vote for him is exactly what is making so many Biden candidates, Biden voters vote for Biden. It is the prospect of the end of the filibuster in the United States Senate, the admission of the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico into the Union in order to secure 4 more Democratic senators, the enlargement of the House of Representatives in order to change the Electoral College, the packing of the Supreme Court and our appellate courts and our other federal courts in order to secure a balance congenial to particular outcomes, the idea of the perversion of our institutions in order to secure outcomes congenial to one political party seems to me to be a far greater menace than the blathering of Donald Trump. That's at least what I said.
And Emily, you mentioned the pandemic and how that's made this election unlike any other. We recently had John Micklethwaite, the editor of Bloomberg News, on this podcast, said that without the pandemic, Donald Trump would have had a very strong chance of winning a second term. But it's his mishandling of the virus that means he's lagging in the polls. Do you agree? Is the pandemic really the main issue for voters? What's shifting opinion?
I agree that the pandemic is a huge issue for voters, and I do agree that it changed the course of this election. My column this week says that I made two predictions way back in 2019, which were that Joe Biden would be the candidate and that Donald Trump would win re-election. And for the latter, it was because nothing really seemed to touch him. He hovered at a 40% approval rating. You know, he was, and also because I think that many of the issues that we in Washington or in the media cover, like the Russia investigation, like impeachment, like potential Hatch Act violations, I don't know how much average voters care. That doesn't mean that they shouldn't be covered. It doesn't mean they're not important. It means that that's not what is bringing somebody to the polls one way or the other. And also, Trump has been very good at the past 4 years of changing the subject from one scandal to another, from one topic to another, or what have you. You kind of can't do that with the pandemic, right? The virus is not scrolling through Twitter. The virus is not watching CNN. The virus is not like, what was that last comment? Or he did what now? And so we've really had to focus on the story of the pandemic and on his handling of it. And it has affected people in a way that Trump apparently pressuring the president of Ukraine to announce an investigation into a political rival did not, right? And that's not an insult to a voter in Wisconsin. That's the reality that if your loved one is dead from this virus, and you hear the president saying, well, we're turning the corner, that is going to have a resonance with you that President Zelensky does not. So yes, I agree with that Bloomberg take, I guess, is the short answer.
And Emily, you're clearly leaning towards the Democrats. Danielle's been very honest about the flaws of the candidate she's thinking of voting for. Joe Biden, I mean, what sort of a campaign do you think he's had? Is he the candidate you would want to vote for
if you'd had a choice of all the Democrats?
Well, I should say that I work for an openly progressive publication, and if I were a member of a different political outlet, I would probably not speak so freely, which I think is something that the media has had to reckon with during these 4 years, right? Like, what is objectivity? What is transparency? What is accountability? Joe Biden, I will just say, was not may not have been my first choice, but I think that the fact that he is the candidate and Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren is not speaks to how moderate much of the Democratic base is, right? Like, they were presented with these two visions. They chose this one.
Would you have preferred a Sanders or a Warren?
Would I personally? I think that if one reads my political writing, the game is kind of given away. So yes, I would have. I consider myself to be a progressive. I don't particularly think that Joe Biden is, but I think that with Joe Biden, one gets a politician, and I think that that is attractive to a lot of. So I mean, just to not to like pick on my dad, and this is obviously purely anecdotal, but my father has never voted for.
I'm sure he'll appreciate it.
Yes, my father has never voted for a Democrat before. He wrote in Mitt Romney in 2016. He lives in New York, and he's voting for Joe Biden this election. And it's because of the sense of like, can we please just get back to politics as usual? Now, there is a whole crop of people on both sides for whom that is a very unattractive proposition, either because they really like Trump and they like this way of doing things, or because, as you know, Danielle alluded to, there are people who want to see the court packed and have DC added to see DC and Puerto Rico become states and abolish the Electoral College. And Joe Biden is not he is not that candidate, but he is the candidate who I think most Democrats felt could win the White House back from Donald Trump, and things like, you know, big progressive policy pushes and things like, you know, having a woman or having a person of color, that was less important to most Democratic voters than having someone who they thought could beat Donald Trump.
And do you think he's the candidate who would be able to return America to some sort of normalcy, you know, like your dad would be voting for?
I think anybody who thinks we can go back to a pre-Trump era should disabuse themselves of that notion. I think that our politics are different. You know, the way that we speak is different. The way that we talk about the media is different now. I think that there are younger Republican voters who are modeling themselves off of Trump. Like, if you look at Representative Matt Gaetz in Florida, who's a young, prominent Republican, I think he's certainly trying to be more in that mold. You also have, you know, the so-called squad. So the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortezes, and these are now forces that have greater voices in American politics. But I do think that that Joe Biden will be a more obviously traditional president than Donald Trump. So even if it's not politics as usual, I think it will be president a little bit more as usual, which is the appealing notion to my father, who's been unfairly called out in this recording.
And Danielle, you know, you mentioned the protests that we've seen already this year. Whoever wins this election, how do they bring the country back together again? Do you think that's possible?
No, I agree with Emily. I think she's right. Unfortunately, for whatever reason, we've ended up in these armed camps that are very hard to reconcile. And the problem for Joe Biden is that if he is the victor tomorrow or this week or sometime soon, we hope, that he doesn't represent a party that wants to go back to when Joe Biden was, you know, a younger and more vibrant senator, let's say. He represents a party that has drifted, much like Emily described the GOP being, you know, very much a party that is perhaps hasn't changed as much, but is certainly in the process of change. And I don't think those changes are going to lend themselves to an easy reconciliation. It's really, honestly, even if Donald Trump weren't the candidate, even if Joe Biden weren't the candidate, it's hard for me to think about who those candidates would be who have the leadership and the respect and the consensus building ability that they could actually sort of stop us in our tracks, end our bickering, end our inability to agree, whether it's, you know, night or day, black or white. That's a challenge for us. And it's a challenge for those of us in Washington who spend a lot of time talking about this and find it very difficult to constantly disagree.
Well, that's a rather alarming prospect of division for the foreseeable, but we'll certainly all be gripped watching the results as they roll in over the next few days, probably. But thank you both so much for talking to us. That's Danielle Pletker and Emily Tamkin. I'm Manveen Rana, and you've been listening to Intelligence Squared.